Buddhism in general, and our practice here in particular, just doesn't focus on any of that. Sometimes you read, and some people might say, that Buddhists don't really believe in anything, that we are a religion without faith. But I don't think that's quite right either. Instead, we believe in practice. We believe that through our practice, we can find the essential Dharma, the essential teachings within ourselves. It takes an act of faith to get up early in the morning, to come sit here in the heat or in the cold, to spend your Sunday at a temple like Jokoji, instead of doing any of the many other things that you could be doing. But it is not faith in a higher power, or even faith in a scripture. It is faith in ourselves and in our own practice, and in our own ability to follow the Buddha's example. You all probably know the story of the Buddha, born about 2,500 years ago. He left home and wandered through what is now Nepal and India before finding enlightenment while sitting under a tree, what we now call a Bodhi tree, or awakening tree, in what has become the small Indian town of Bodh Gaya. The Buddha's title literally means the awakened one. He was born Siddhartha Gautama, and we know him by many names: world-honored one, Shakyamuni, sage of the Shakyas. But mostly we just call him Buddha, because from the start, the Buddha Dharma, what we call Buddhism, has been about that first waking up. Every ordained Zen Buddhist can trace his or her lineage all the way back to the Buddha, and we read through that lineage today. When I was ordained by our founding teacher, Kōpin Shino Roshi, he gave me a paper with that lineage written, which shows him as my teacher, and then his teacher before that, and his teacher before that, all the way back, in the reverse order we read, teacher to teacher, to the Buddha himself. The Buddha, the original awakened one, is the original teacher of all of us. Every morning in our morning service, we call out several of these teachers to express special gratitude. One of these is Bodhidharma. He lived around 1,200 years ago, so he stands historically almost exactly halfway between us and the Buddha. And that's always how I think of him, halfway between us and the Buddha. From a modern perspective, the life of the Buddha is mostly lost to legend. When my daughters ask if the various stories about the Buddha are true, I have to admit that nobody really knows. As with Jesus or Moses or most other ancient figures, everything that comes down to us about the Buddha was written long after he had died and has almost certainly been edited by many hands. But Bodhidharma, I would say, is only about half lost to legend. Some of the stories about him, like about sitting for so many years in a cave that both his legs fell off, some of those probably aren't true. But we do have a few writings that survive from roughly Bodhidharma's time. Many of these were uncovered only in the last century, sealed away in a cave in northwest China, where they had been hidden for almost 1,000 years. Among these is a short biography of Bodhidharma, which goes like this. He was the third son of an Indian king. His divine insight was clear. Whatever he heard, he understood. His ambition lay in the Mahayana path, and so he put aside his white layman's robe for the black robe of a monk. He merged with the sagely lineage and made it flourish. His dark mind was empty and quiescent. His virtue surpassed that of the leaders of his age. Lamenting the decline of the true teaching in the outlands, he subsequently crossed distant mountains and seas, traveling about, propagating the teaching in Han and Wei in northern China. Of scholars who have extinguished the mind, there were none who did not come to have faith in him. In China, Bodhidharma became the first patriarch of the Chan or Zen school of Buddhism. And what distinguished his teaching from all the other Buddhist lineages already thriving in China was his emphasis on awakening right now through practice. Other lineages had started to turn Buddhism into something more like a conventional religion, with complicated beliefs and rituals, with implicit bargains promising that if you believed certain things, other things, good things, might happen to you. But Bodhidharma took our practice back to its simplest form. There were no bargains and no shortcuts. In one of the few sermons of his that remain, he said, "Whatever you do, wherever you are, that's your real mind. That's your real Buddha. Beyond this mind, you'll never find another Buddha. To search for awakening or nirvana beyond this mind is impossible." And this is why we believe in practice. Sitting is a chance to experience our one true mind right here and right now. Bodhidharma says later in this sermon, "To find a Buddha, all you have to do is to see your own nature. Your nature is the Buddha. If you don't find your nature and run around all day looking somewhere else, you'll never find a Buddha. The truth is, there's nothing to find." Zazen, literally sitting Zen, is a chance to wake up to our true nature without quite so many distractions pulling at our attention, lulling us into our usual half-sleep. It's our attempt to find a middle way between our hectic everyday lives and some sort of complete isolation. It is not sensory deprivation exactly, but it does help us calm the mind. We keep our eyes open, but we face a plain wall. We focus on our breathings. We relax our bodies. We don't force our thoughts away, but we allow them to come and go, watching them arise and trying not to become too attached to them. We sit here together and allow ourselves to be aware. About 400 years after Bodhidharma, the great teacher Eihei Dogen brought Soto Zen to Japan. Dogen is another of the teachers we mentioned in our chant today. Living only 800 years ago, Dogen is a true historical figure, and we know a lot about his life. He was something of a Buddhist prodigy, ordained at a young age, and he studied with many of the great Japanese masters of his time. Eventually, he undertook what was then a very dangerous journey to China, and studied there with one master after another, until he had his own awakening, what he called the dropping away of body and mind. Several volumes of Dogen's teachings are preserved for us and remain widely studied in Japan and elsewhere. But really, Dogen's teachings are no different from Bodhidharma's or from the Buddha's. His focus, like theirs, is on our basic practice. "Although this inconceivable Dharma is abundant in each person," he explained, "it is not actualized without practice, and it is not experienced without realization." In one of Dogen's books, he tells this story from the early days of Buddhism. The king of a country in eastern India invited a Buddhist master to a feast, in the course of which he asked, "Everyone is reciting scriptures. Why don't you?" The master explained, "Breathing out, I do not follow myriad objects. Breathing in, I do not dwell on mental or physical elements. I always recite such a scripture, hundreds of thousands of millions of volumes." That again is the essence of our practice. Practice itself is our scripture. Sitting here and breathing in quiet meditation is our recitation. Of course, there's nothing wrong with reading scriptures. When I was preparing this talk, I went back to reread some of the words of the Buddha, Bodhidharma, and Dogen, and I've read some excerpts of those to you. But you don't need to read any of that to be awakened. You don't need to believe that the Buddha lived, that Bodhidharma really traveled from India to China, or that Dogen brought Soto Zen to Japan. All you need to do is to practice. I don't want to make that sound easy. Practice is difficult. Anyone who can read can recite a scripture. But to sit wholeheartedly with true concentration, even for a few minutes, is very difficult. Some of you probably found our sitting today difficult. I often do. And that is why it takes some faith to persevere. Again, it might be easier to spend our Sunday somewhere else. But we believe in practice. Dogen tells another story about a famous statesman in Tang Dynasty China who visited a local Zen master. When the master explained our very simple practice, the statesman was not at all impressed. He told the master, "Even a 3-year-old child can say this." The master replied, "A 3-year-old child may be able to say it, but an 80-year-old man cannot practice it." Yet although it is difficult, we practice anyway, because we know in the end that awakening is possible. This is what the Buddha showed us, what he is still showing us. This is our true faith. This is what we believe. Thank you for joining me in that practice this morning.
I like those lines too. I haven't heard those before. I do think there's a temptation to personalize our practice and our lives, to experience life as something that's happening to us, when of course it's just happening and would happen with or without us. And I think to some extent we find that in our practice too, that we can sometimes come to see our practice as our personal journey. I get very wrapped up in the story of our trials and tribulations of coming to be here. And part of our teaching is that we need to step beyond that, and that our personal stories are important in their own way, but that our practice is something that in many ways isn't personal. It's universal. It's one of the things that I always enjoy about sitting in a zendo like this is the feeling that each of us is experiencing in those moments of breathing, staring at the wall, something that's been experienced by every student and teacher going all the way back. And that in a sense, we really are all of one mind. That Dogen himself could walk into the Zendo and know what to do and feel quite at home. To find a Buddha, all you have to do is see your own nature. Your nature is the Buddha. If you don't find your nature and run around all day looking somewhere else, you'll never find a Buddha. The truth is, there's nothing to find. Well, I think it's a complicated question. There are, in the Buddhist tradition, there are many methods or many paths, and the necessity of time is sometimes unclear. There are stories of people listening to the Buddha and having immediate enlightenment, seemingly almost without practice, just they have an immediate realization. But then even some of our great teachers, like Bodhidharma, are said to have required years and years of meditation before having their awakening. And even in modern times, I think for most of us, we assume that it takes time, it takes years of practice, but you still hear stories of people who have sudden awakenings, and it's hard to know what to think about that. I think our practice is not quite like, let's say, practicing the piano, where it is almost impossible to imagine progressing without just all those hours. And it isn't clear why it would take time to realize yourself. But for most of us, it seems that it does. Well, that's, in some ways, that's the central question of Dogen and most of the Zen school.
if we're all inherently Buddhas, if all we have to do is be ourselves, then what is the need for practice? Why does anybody need to practice? And as I said, there's some sense, maybe even some evidence, that there are people who can be awakened without what we would recognize as practice. But for most of us, it just doesn't seem to happen that way. It is true that you can be awakened without a zendo, without scripture. Of course, the Buddha was awakened without a zendo and without scripture. I often think of practice as just almost what it says. Practicing, that we are practicing being ourselves in a sort of controlled environment where we don't have quite as many distractions and where it's easier to get that focus. And I think of it, I've used this analogy before a little bit, like, you know, when you're sick and you go to the hospital and you're in this controlled environment where you have some support and you have some help and you have experts around you who can help you through it. But of course the goal is to leave the hospital, is to get well and then go and be well in your life, not just to be well in the hospital. And in the same way, we come to the zendo and to the temple to be able to focus on awakening, on finding our true nature. But the goal, if there is a goal, the hope, is to then be able to take that true nature out of the temple and to be able to experience it in our lives. And so you can meditate anywhere. I mean, you can meditate while you walk, that's quite common. You can meditate while you drive, while you work, while you talk to people. It's just harder. It's harder to keep that focus when you have distractions, when you have lots of emotions arising. And here we have some quiet, some peace, and we can just literally practice paying attention to ourselves and our breathing, our bodies, our minds. And the hope is that we develop enough comfort, even skill with that, that we can then carry that out and do that everywhere, all the time. And so I find it very helpful. I think there are people who try to jump right to practicing only in their everyday lives without coming to a meditation hall like this, without a formal practice. But I think for most of us, taking a break from that life every now and then to just focus in this way is extremely helpful. Well, I think it's almost time for lunch, so thank you all very much and enjoy the rest of your day.